Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, editor of PWTorch.com and MMATorch.com, and also host of this, the PW Torch Livecast, Mondays through Thursdays, Mondays after Raw, Tuesdays after SmackDown. Midweek, we're on at 1 Eastern for the midweek flagship. Broad topics discussed every Wednesday on the professional wrestling industry, and Thursday at 1 Eastern. I host Interview Thursday tomorrow, Jim Ross, my confirmed guest. He's always great on this program. And today on the Midweek Flagship, our rotating co-hosts include our regular favorite. Did I say that out loud? Okay, one of our favorites, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. Jason, how you doing?
Hey, great, Wade. Good to be here.
I'm glad you can hear me. I had to use an alternate means of connecting to our switchboard today with some the server getting busy for Blog Talk Radio. So I'm glad that I'm being heard and that we are on the air. Jason, you're here a week early because you spend 10 straight days Christmas shopping for your family and friends. And I think that's really admirable.
No, actually, see, I only do this show on Wednesday. And Wednesday with my schedule, it tends to be the day I end up doing Christmas shopping, the last Wednesday before Christmas. And so instead of being here next week, I may be, you know, going from store to store listening to you and whoever your co-host is.
That'd be fun. That'd be cool. We'll keep you in mind and wish you some good deals. I was just thinking you weren't available at all because you just were so generous that you spent 10 straight days Christmas shopping, which wouldn't be good for your website, which is ProWrestling.net, by the way. I'm sure we'll mention that a few times during the show. Well, happy holidays, Jason. Merry Christmas. I don't know if you'll be on before the new year, so happy new year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Same to you. You're a little choppy. I don't know if there's anything you can do about it. It's certainly tolerable, but if there's anything, I don't know if you can do anything.
All right. Well, yeah. There's an alternate that I don't want to deal with. If that's the case. So
hopefully, it's just my phone.
Well, we'll find out. People can let me know on Twitter. That's what I was worried about with this alternate connection, but unfortunately, got to do what we can do, and we're having some tech issues. But anyway, well, Jason, we've got the end of the year coming up. Obviously, we're all aware of that. And WWE last night on SmackDown promoted the December 27th episode, the last episode of the year, the return of John Cena, I think just kind of a bridge to get to the next phase with Dolph Ziggler challenging AJ Styles for the championship. It seems like they're trying to load up that show for December 27th because that's the start of Royal Rumble, WrestleMania season. We got the road to the Rumble and the road to WrestleMania. And we're at that point where that's what we're going to start talking about. This year, I think there's quite a bit up in the air in terms of who the top stars in WWE are going to end up facing. With John Cena coming back in 2 weeks on SmackDown, and they're making a big deal out of it, I certainly think that they anticipate Cena being a prominent star at WrestleMania this year in a prominent match. Do you have someone that you lean strongly on right now that's going to be his opponent at the big show?
I guess right now it's one of two people. I think it's Undertaker or it's AJ Styles. It's just whatever they want to go with this year. There's certainly a storyline there with AJ Styles that, you know, that's been waiting for his return. They could do that at the Rumble. They could have Taker win the title at the Rumble and then save AJ and John Cena for post-WrestleMania. But those are the two that really jump out at me. Anyone I'm not thinking of?
Well, I mean, there's always the conversation, what if Roman Reigns wins Universal Championship and turns heel, and then Cena decides to come in and save the day from Roman Reigns, because there's, you know, there's some money in that matchup. So I like to at least talk about that as one of the options. But really, it does seem like this would be the best year and maybe the last chance for Cena versus Undertaker. It's an epic match that I think kind of sells itself, although certainly they can do quite a bit to let people know why this is a big deal and what this means historically. If they build it as Undertaker's potential last match, they could also sell the notion, they've hinted at this before, that maybe Cena's got so much going on that this might be his last match, and that the loser will be done with WWE full-time, or I don't know. I mean, is there some sort of stipulation they can put on it? It would maybe add to the match, but in a way, it might make the outcome predictable, and it also would limit them in the future, especially if neither of the guys is ready to completely walk away. But I know there's going to be talk about, you know, will this be a retirement match for Taker?
You know, I think if that match were announced as a loser leaves, a retirement match, we'll say, I think you would see the instant reaction, well, Taker's done, that's it. I still think it would have massive box office appeal. You'd want to see Taker's last match. And I think the fans in the building, by the time Mania got here, people would convince themselves that it could be either guy. And they would be reacting as if, you know, to every near fall, as if that could be the end of the match.
That is part of the fun of wrestling, a phrase you just said. People will talk themselves into something. And I like that phrase because I really do think pro wrestling fans like to talk themselves into plausible situations because it makes things more enjoyable. And I hope WWE, whatever they do with any lineup, especially WrestleMania, that they leave the that they do what they can unabashedly to make us believe in multiple outcomes and multiple stipulations. And if they do their job, I think wrestling fans are willing to play along with that kind of thing. All right. What are we at here? Okay, my clock is thrown off because we got started a little bit late. Let me give out the phone numbers because we're going to obviously take phone calls here. 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Let's talk current events, and we can also talk big picture headed into WrestleMania, and we can also talk...
Oh, and good news, Wade. The one button worked today.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. Good start. Well, that's a consolation, I'll put it that way. So we've got our Road to WrestleMania and the Rumble, so I wouldn't mind to have some big-picture conversation about that, although if you're not quite ready for it, I can understand. And we can also reflect back on Raw and SmackDown. We also have news from the world of Flow Slam. Some people are already excited about the announcement that OTT Wrestling out of Ireland has joined Flow Slam and that they've got a big event coming up this weekend that they're excited about. Jason, do you know much about OTT? Right now, I saw comments on the Flow Slam Twitter feed just going, we're in, just signed up for a year. I'm excited about this. It is kind of a piecemeal splash that Flow Slam is making, but they are fulfilling their mission, you know, which is to bring together some of the best, most buzz-generating indie promotions around the world to create a single access point for some of the best non WWE and TNA, and so far non ROH and non New Japan wrestling out there. I think that there's some excitement over this OTT announcement, and it's another step towards Flow Slam kind of landing on people's radar a little bit more.
I am not down with OTT. Just had to get that one out of the way. Not familiar with the group. I mean, I've certainly heard about how well things are going in Ireland. I know there was a big show there recently. And so, I mean, it's cool. I mean, this is the way that, an easier way for people to start accessing some of the international promotions and a step in the right direction. I don't know that it's going to make anyone rich to just get that group on there right now.
Yeah.
But as you said, you know, they're just kind of slowly but surely adding new promotions to it. And I think with each addition comes new subscribers.
The the OTT Dream Before Christmas premieres as a Flow Slam world premiere on December 28th. So the day after AJ Styles versus Dolph Ziggler, you can watch on Flow Slam the Belfast or the Dream Before Christmas, and then the Belfast Invasion will stream the following night at 7:30 Eastern, and they'll be available, of course, on demand after that. They're the Dream Before Christmas headlines with Ricochet versus Will Ospreay, which is one of the reasons people are pretty excited about the accessibility of this show now through an over-the-top streaming method that has a collection of other stuff. All right, Let's talk quickly about John Cena on SNL, Jason. I want to get your thoughts on that, and then we'll go to our break. We'll come back, and we'll start rolling through phone calls. So now is the time to call us, 515-605-9345. Jason, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle to Cena on SNL.
Him? Thumbs in the middle. He did what they asked of him. You know, I didn't check. I didn't get a chance to listen to your full breakdown, but I did hear you talking a little bit about it on last night's post show. And very much in the same, we're on the same page here.
Okay.
It just was not a good Saturday Night Live. I kind of go in spurts with Saturday Night Live. There's like entire seasons I'll miss if it's just kind of a downstretch, and I'll wait for somebody to say, hey, it's been good again. And this year with the election, I really wanted to see it. And so I've seen every episode, and this was the worst episode of the season, and it wasn't John Cena's fault. It's like they just phoned in this entire week. I really didn't find myself laughing very often, if at all.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to get... I mean, I think it's important to get feedback from pro wrestling fans. I'm curious how non-pro wrestling fans judge it, because, you know, we're watching, and we know that John Cena... from WWE TV. We know what he's capable of, both good and bad, in terms of talent and some groan-inducing aspects to his personality and performance. But I haven't read or sought out, actually, at this point, like people just reviewing John Cena compared to other guest hosts. And, you know, with the NBC Universal connection with WWE and the whole family of TV shows and Hulu all being together, WWE and NBC, it felt a little cozy. I don't know that if Saturday Night Live was a CBS show or a Fox show that John Cena necessarily would have been picked to host, although I guess John does the Fox reality show, so maybe. And he does Good Morning America sometimes, and that's ABC. So, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but I'm not sure that when people thought of a guy with quick comic timing and, you know, some aspect that would fit into SNL that John Cena was a guy. I thought he was written more narrowly than he needed to be. Yes, he did the Karate Kid skit, which I chuckled at. That's a, you know, movie I grew up with. But other than that, he stood around wearing wigs while people gawked at his muscles or marveled at his muscles. And it was kind of a slight variation, skit to skit to skit, of John just sitting there making funny faces and talking somewhere between, you know, Mojo Rawley and Zack Ryder, playing into, I think, some dumbed down stereotypes, or just being stiff and not really doing much at all. I really, I'm with you. I think the writing let John down more than John let down the writing. I will put that out there.
Yeah, I did, but, you know, the Trump skit with the... It wasn't even a skit, it was more of a video with the big hands. Cena didn't even have to do anything other than stand there and have the big hands on as he looked in the mirror, but that did get a laugh out of me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, him as Gronk, I mean, it just was the same joke over and over. I mean, they were... people got a kick out of the Conor McGregor impersonation. But it was just like, okay, we get it. Athletes are frivolous with money. And it's just, they're really, as much as I think people know Gronk, know his personality, it's not like he's out there enough where you can say, as a diehard NFL fan, I couldn't even sit here, I couldn't tell you if he did a good job of impersonating Rob Gronkowski, because I just don't see enough of Rob Gronkowski interviews to know if Cena did a great job or not.
Yeah. John had said, he said in the WWE video package they put together, he wants to do it again. I don't think he did anything to disqualify himself, but I also don't think that he was just so funny that SNL was like, wow, this guy's going to be a regular. We're going to have him on every season. I don't think he put in that kind of performance. But knowing his work ethic, let me ask this. Are guest hosts usually in every skit? Because John was like in every skit or all but one, and I know I've watched SNL where there's a guest host, and they're in maybe half or a little over half. It seemed like John put in more work than most guest hosts do, or more appearances.
Yeah, I think he... I got the same feeling. I kept waiting for that skit that he wasn't in. I don't think all the hosts are in every skit.
No.
I think he did more. I guess the one thing... I was disappointed from the start that they didn't give him a full-on monologue, that it was, you know, people coming out... it's usually comedians who kind of get the more full-on monologue, but I think he's someone that, if it's crafted for him, he can go out there and deliver it. I mean, we see him do it on Monday nights and Tuesday nights. You know, he can. I think he could have wowed some people had they given him the right material to go out there and just deliver a standard monologue introducing the show, just more of a, you know, 5-minute comedy type of monologue. I think he would have nailed that.
I do too. Or rapping. Maybe he wanted to stay away from that, but. and some people would groan, but he can do thugonomics. And I think people would have been surprised to know John Cena from the Today Show, or, you know, a movie role, or being, you know, being interviewed about wrestling, but not really knowing his past and what he can do. If he walked out there and started off kind of stiff and muscular and then just broke into some kind of thugonomics thing, I mean, that's a zone that he's comfortable in, unless he feels like he's outgrown it and doesn't want to be known for that. I was a little surprised they didn't go that direction.
Yeah, me too. I really do wonder if this was, hey, we've got this muscle head, and let's just, you know, I don't know how much they follow John Cena, you know, the writers and things. I don't know if they realized what they had. If this was just, they looked at this as the same as getting some former NFL player who doesn't, you know, who's not really a natural at this. Let's put him in a bunch of things where it's about his appearance more than anything.
I agree. But I think it's good for WWE, Jason. I mean, having Cena in that spot that is reserved for pretty big pop culture stars who are in the news, or obviously there's, you know, old cast members and, you know, a Steve Martin or, you know, somebody from the past. But it's in terms of the categories that, or the various categories of who becomes a guest host, John Cena fits the category of a guy, of somebody who they believe can draw a rating and connect with their audience because he's a current pop star. He's part of pop culture, I guess a better way to put it. And I think he represented wrestlers well. And I think part of his strategy might have been to just put a good face on what it means to be a, quote, WWE capital S superstar. And I think in that sense he did it, even if it was conservative. And the ratings were good for the show. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's back, but I won't be shocked if he's not. If only because he wasn't in any particular skit hilarious, or I don't think he gave off that he has this really good comedy niche that they can exploit in the future. How many times can you have him wear a wig and look muscular and have women fawn over him and men gawk at him before that joke runs out? I will say I think they left a lot on the table, and a second appearance could be quite a bit better than the first, because they just, I don't think, exploited his talent in that regard. But Cena is breaking out in the mainstream. Now it's happening late in his wrestling tenure, because going on 40 years old, he's clearly not working year-round full-time anymore. He's not that workhorse, nor should he be. I don't blame him at all. But, you know, somebody had asked me on email, I think I answered this on the Wade Keller hotline for VIP members, did John Cena break out too late? Should he have been a bigger star the last dozen years? I had a pretty long answer to that, and I think that, you know, he probably had the career he deserved. But is this a too little too late, Jason, or do you think, you know, John Cena should have been given more opportunities earlier in his run as a top guy in WWE to be in the mainstream?
I think they tried to control it. I wonder if he was a victim of, we don't want to lose him like we lost Dwayne Johnson. Yeah. And so, you know, they gave him 12 rounds, which, you know, it's laughable now when you think about what 12 rounds is, because it's just straight to DVD like everything else, but that was actually a regular theater release. You know, they thought they were going to be able to get something out of that. And so I just wonder, with his work ethic and his rah-rah WWE approach to things, I'll bet it's something he didn't pursue as aggressively as The Rock. And who knows if he would have if the climate had been different. If with Rock leaving the way he did, and for whatever reason there being bad feelings over it at the time, I just wonder if Cena just being, you know, the consummate rah-rah WWE professional guy and knowing the lay of the land, just kind of never went there. Was happy to do what he was doing. I mean, I don't think he can ever be Dwayne Johnson, but, you know, few can. But I think he can continue. I don't think he's ever going to be a leading man in anything truly successful. I think he is more of a, what we've seen him, you know, kind of smaller comedic roles. I don't think he has leading man chops as far as anything dramatic goes. So I think it's going to be, he's going to shine in the comedic segments that he's been in. And, you know, maybe a buddy cop movie is probably the best he could hope for, is my guess.
Yeah, I think the question now is, can John Cena be bigger than Hulk Hogan for this generation who know about a mainstream breakout crossover pro wrestler? And I think that's a great question. If you're John Cena 10 years ago and that's a conversation we're having, I think he's pretty happy with that conversation. I think that 5 years ago, or, you know, whenever John Cena first started dropping hints, this was a ways before he actually wrestled Rock at WrestleMania. When John Cena started saying, I want Rock, calling out Rock, I remember just thinking, come on, John. You know, that's just way above your pay grade level. I mean, Rock's not going to wrestle you. You're you're a top star, but you're getting booed. It's not the Attitude Era. And I just remember looking at John Cena through a very different lens then. And I think we forget that sometimes when a guy reaches a level that John has, which is breaking out into the mainstream and having a post-wrestling career. I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that before the Rock matches, a lot of us, I think the vast majority of fans, saw it as a pipe dream that Rock would leave his movie career and come back and wrestle John Cena. Maybe Rock will come back for a bigger star, but not John. So this is, I think John's probably pretty happy with this conversation that he's having. I'm just glad we didn't get the Total Bellas version of John Cena. I don't know how much you saw of that version of John the last couple months this fall, but oh, was he stiff and boorish and boring and disconnected, and I was not a flattering version of John Cena on that show.
No, I walked away from the first episode, and I've seen him on Total Divas in the past, too.
Yeah.
He's just so obsessive-compulsive. It's like, if this guy wasn't a pro wrestler, I'd be worried that he was a serial killer. I mean, he's just he's bizarre.
Yeah, and you wonder how much that gets played up, but there's a reason they picked that to amplify, as Vince McMahon always said. We take real traits of our wrestlers, and we amplify them. And the way, yeah, John and his household rules, some of them were reasonable, and then some of them were like, okay, that's pushing it, and then it would get to the point where you're like, okay, this has to be a joke. This can't be what he's really like. So, but that aside, I think it's a big moment for John Cena, but I also think it's a big moment for WWE, because when you think of where they were, and this is kind of the gist of my answer over the weekend with the Wade Keller Hotline, when you think of where they were post-Chris Benoit, even leading into the Chris Benoit tragedy, it was about this dirty business with a bunch of drug users who are dying in their 30s and 40s, and sponsors, were leery. And WWE has been working very hard, sometimes to the frustration of wrestling fans who just want a good wrestling product, to put their brand over and rebrand themselves. And I think that they've succeeded greatly in that regard. And John Cena on SNL is something that I don't think a lot of people would have considered possible 9-10 years ago with a star similar to John Cena at his level, because of all the scandals, all the tragedies and the stench on what people who only peripherally paid attention to pro wrestling thought what that industry was all about.
Yeah, they have done a terrific job. I mean, it's everything from the wellness policy, tribute to the troops. Overall, it's not just one particular thing. Going PG the way they have. As annoying as it's been at times with their approach to it, I think it has helped. You don't hear the horror stories about their talent like you once did, and so that's definitely been beneficial. Are you surprised there wasn't any, hey, tune in for the Royal Rumble plug or anything like that, that they didn't have something worked out where John Cena would be able to promote WWE in some way?
What do other guest hosts do to promote their product?
You will hear, coming up in theater, whatever. So, something along that. They're not afraid to include if it, and I guess I'll pay more attention to it going forward, but I know I've heard movie plugs on there before.
Yeah, and I think if WrestleMania was next weekend, we would have gotten that. I think probably there's a level of self-consciousness with John Cena that, yeah, I'm a WWE superstar, but I think he probably wanted to go in being more than that. And not seem like he was a wrestler pitching wrestling, but that he was a star who happened to be a wrestler, but also is in movies and co-hosts, guest hosts of the Today Show. And I think he wanted to come across as something more than that. And so other than the opening monologue with the wrestling stuff, they kind of got that out of the way and moved on. All right, we're going to go to our break.
It wasn't very funny.
No, it wasn't. I agree. It was off to a rough start. We're going to go to our first break. When we come back, your phone calls, 515-605-9345. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, and here's a word from our sponsor. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. And just like that, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Jason Powell. We are live on the air on Wednesday afternoon, December 14th, 2016. Jason Paul is my guest from ProWrestling.net. Jason, this industry is so bang, bang, bang now with so much product. No time for reflection. Same thing just with social media, websites, podcasting. It's just go, 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 go. Different than 10, 20 years ago. And I think there's less time that wrestling fans and wrestling reporters, journalists, radio / podcast hosts spend reflecting on the prior year. Very broad question to you, and then I do want to get to our promise of going to phone calls right here. Do you think this has – what's your first response or first thought when I say, has this been a good or bad or middle-of-the-road year for the professional wrestling industry, and then part two for WWE specifically?
I think it has been a good year. Somehow TNA has managed to stay in business, and it looks like they're going to have new ownership officially soon, and, you know, we'll see where that goes, but there's nothing that could be worse than where they were at with, you know, all the debt and everything else, so that's encouraging. Then I do think, you know, Flow Slam, it's been kind of a slow launch, I think, but I think that's a positive for the wrestling industry, and in giving these independents some exposure and giving a lot of wrestlers exposure, I think it's been a solid year for Ring of Honor. I think that their television show has improved. It's still nowhere near what it could be, but they continue to deliver good pay-per-view main events. Final Battle was really a blast. I thought that was their best pay-per-view performance to date. And as far as, Lucha Underground kind of seems like they're fading a little bit. It just doesn't feel like they matter as much as they did when they first started. There's not as much buzz about them. Something's got to kind of give there, I guess. There's only so much wrestling people can watch, and I feel bad for them. I think a lot of it has to do with the network that they're on. I just don't think there's too many people making El Rey Network a destination channel on a regular basis, and so it's easy to miss. Or if you don't know it exists, it's kind of buried in the 300 somewhere on DirecTV away from all of the, I'm guessing others who kind of have similar, other cable sister satellite systems have kind of a similar slot for it. It's just not something, you're not going to come across it basically, unless you happen to like one of the channels that's next to it. WWE, I think it has been a good year. I think that network growth continues to be slow but steady. You know, they haven't really had that massive collapse yet. I worried about. It's like, yeah, they're going to peak with Mania. God knows what they're going to do at the end of the year. I think it's caused them to work harder just throughout the year. How many times have we talked about that post-SummerSlam lull? Or just sometimes it's more of a Survivor Series lull. The late end of the year has been filled with some really bad things over the years, and we're not getting that. I think they feel they need to load up these pay-per-views, and Roadblock may be an exception. But, I mean, they're making Survivor Series matter again. They brought back Goldberg for that event. And then overall, I think, you know, with NXT, it may not be as hot as it once was. That's a story I think we need to keep an eye on, but I still want to see what they do to replenish their talent roster here before the end of the year. I think it's been a good year. It's not a great year for WWE, but I think it's been a good year.
All right, very good. Let's go to the phone lines. Our number 515-605-9345. You can also call us, and we certainly encourage, or excuse me, you can also email us, and we encourage you to do that at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Let's begin with area code 320. I believe that this is Carl in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Carl, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, how you doing? I got three quick questions. My first one is, I think Undertaker and Cena are going to face each other, so where would you see that leave AJ for WrestleMania? And then my second question is, have you heard anything about a Hall of Fame headliner? And then just my last question, if you guys don't care, what were your guys' thoughts on The Walking Dead on Sunday?
Hello.
I am two or three episodes behind, I think three now, behind on Walking Dead. So no spoilers, but Jason, did you see Sunday's episode, and can you vaguely talk about it if so?
Yeah, I mean, I have to, because we have, in Q&A, there's the Walking Dead questions of the week.
Yes.
I get bombarded with Walking Dead questions during the season, and I always do give a spoiler warning. It was a good finale. It wasn't the most shocking. You know, they weren't out to try to do what they did at the end of last season, that, you know, and create that type of buzz. But it was, it was a solid finale. I wish I could go into more. It's kind of hard when I can't really get into spoilers, but
yeah.
I did enjoy it.
The top heel in Walking Dead, Negan. When he was on a talk show, the actor who plays him, I was so relieved because I was so scared he was real. Like, he is so convincing and just evil that, like, it took me into this world of. You know, like, fearing that, you know, somebody could be that bad. I needed to see him, like, talking out of character and laughing and being, kind and normal and human. It was a relief because I think he is one of the better heel characters. I mean, the governor was good. Not even just Walking Dead, just in the scope of things. I thought that they did, and granted, they went quite over the top in the season premiere in establishing it. But even if you take out the gruesome season opener, I just think he's been amazing as a character.
A funny story on that, and it does have a wrestling connection, is that my girlfriend woke up. She doesn't really watch the show. She'll, you know, kind of be around when I'm watching it. She watched the first couple seasons, just kind of moved on. But she woke up from a dead sleep, and it was an episode. Was it last week or the week before? Where Negan was just all. I think it was last week. I think it was 90 minutes of Negan, basically, which is just awesome. And so there she is, waking up, and I figure she's going to roll over. She was captivated. She just sat there and couldn't get back to sleep. She's just watching this. And then when the show is over, she asked me, he doesn't do interviews, does he? And I said, what do you mean? Well, he doesn't, like, break the character and go out there and do interviews. And it's funny because I never it's something you and I may talk about. It's not anything I've ever talked about with her as far as wrestlers breaking character and doing mainstream interviews. I'm like, yes, he does. She's like, oh, darn. And she has no interest in seeing any of them, even though she thinks that, you know, the character is just great.
That's interesting, yeah. Well, it's about giving people a story to believe in. And, you know, I say that I was relieved, but at the same time, I'm not sure that it was good for the – it's good for the show to have him out there being human. You know, I mean, part of getting wrapped up in wrestling.
Well, especially right after on Talking Dead.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. I kind of, you know, and pro wrestling is different than a show that clearly is bringing in actors, because as Vince always said, pro wrestling, these guys are playing themselves, just an amped up version of themselves. And I think that's the best approach to take when you are trying to sell people on wrestling. That's why I didn't like going full circle to John Cena saying and one of the first lines on the show was, what's your wrestling character? I didn't like him saying that.
Right.
You know, I thought that was... That's something written by somebody who plays video games or is, you know, looks at wrestling as, you know, this you know, comic book with, you know, people just playing roles. And granted, there's going to be, you know, like Undertaker, not to get too deep into this, but like Undertaker has worked hard. Mark Calloway's worked hard to protect the idea that there's something about his character worth protecting, that it's not just a guy playing a role. And Bray Wyatt doesn't seem to get that, you know, like, I mean, in terms of his social media appearances and that ridiculous Instagram picture of him puckering his lips and sticking his butt out and posing all funny with Stephanie McMahon. I thought he was like doing Adrian Street for a minute. The guy's just clueless.
Oh, you're really breaking up now. Wait, I don't know.
Oh, really?
There's anything he can do.
All right. Well, that's, I can, there's an alternate that I don't want to, go to and call in by phone. But
wait, I'm not hearing you at all at this point.
All right, Jason, go ahead and try to answer, our caller's question and I'll switch mics.
Hopefully everyone else is hearing Wade. Well, now I hear some rustling, so hopefully that means he's in the process of...
I haven't heard him at all.
You haven't heard me either?
No,
what was
bad.
Your other
he
question? I can certainly
bad.
Answer it while Wade tries to get his issue resolved.
My two questions were, where do you think AJ will be? Because I really think they're going to be Cena versus Taker. Where does that leave AJ at WrestleMania? And my other question was, have you heard anything about a Hall of Fame headliner?
I haven't heard anything about a headliner. I mean, Goldberg would make some sense, but I think now he's going to be on the show. We've seen Ric Flair be a rare exception of a guy who works the show and is inducted the same year. So, I mean, they could do it. I actually hope they don't if they plan to use Goldberg more. they may think there's some value in making a branding him as the wrestling Hall of Famer. You know, so when he, if he shows up at SummerSlam again, he's WWE Hall of Famer Bill Goldberg, and it's, they try to make it the part of the novelty of seeing him is that he already is a Hall of Famer. But I hope they don't go that route. That one I just haven't put a lot of thought into. As far as AJ goes, you know, I would love to see it be Samoa Joe. All the buzz with him not, you know, he's been working NXT house shows. He didn't work the tapings. So I'm hoping he comes up. And I'm somebody that for the longest time, when AJ went to WWE and people would ask about AJ dream matches and that sort of thing, they mentioned Samoa Joe and it just was nowhere on my list because I'd seen it so many times in TNA over the years that it just, you know, it's like, I want to see AJ and Joe both work with different people. But I think enough time has passed now, and it would just the thrill of seeing Samoa Joe finally get the call, I'd be down with that. So if it ends up being, you know, AJ could work Taker, he could work John Cena, but if those two are working each other, then, yeah, you kind of have to think outside the box. I don't think it's going to be Dean Ambrose. I don't think it's going to be James Ellsworth. So I don't know that it would be, there's really nobody else on SmackDown that jumps out at me, and so maybe it would be somebody coming up to the main roster, or maybe somehow AJ ends up working with someone on Raw, because there's no one, wait if you're there, let us know, but there's no one on the SmackDown side beyond, I guess, Taker, if you count him, and Cena that really appeals to me as far as it being a real big WrestleMania match for AJ Styles. Wade, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, if AJ is not going to face either Cena or Undertaker because they're facing each other, it is slim pickings in terms of that SmackDown roster. I mean, looking at what they had to do last night on SmackDown just to get him an opponent for the 27th in 2 weeks is recycling Dolph Ziggler, the biggest loser of big matches, or the big I guess he's more of a like a 50-50 guy maybe at best in terms of big matches, but he never sustains any kind of momentum. And now you've got Dolph Ziggler, because he won a fatal four-way, getting a title shot again. That just shows you how thin things are. Now, they did leave off some wrestlers. They left off Baron Corbin. He's a heel, not a top candidate to fight AJ. The last night, they left off Bray and Randy. But they're a heel tag team, not really the best candidates to face AJ. So I'm not sure that they had many better options. The Luke Harper thing was interesting, and I don't want to get too far off the broad topic, but this sort of relates. Interacting with Luke the way he did, when Luke looked at AJ and AJ said, yeah, look down here, this is what a champion looks like, and he pointed at his belt, I thought it was interesting to have a heel in AJ talking to a heel like Luke Harper like that, putting fans in a position to go, ooh, who would I root for in that situation? And when that happens, you start, you know, starting to think of positive traits about a heel, which can be dangerous for a wrestling company when the goal is to get beat on heels so that the baby faces get cheered, and, you know, that's the structure that draws money historically and works the best, indisputably, I would argue. And so that was interesting, because I don't know if that was just, well, we got a show to fill and let's convince fans in the micro moment of this match that maybe Luke versus AJ is a possibility. But I'm not suggesting Luke Harper is a WrestleMania-worthy opponent, because that has not been built up strong enough for that. But I thought that it showed maybe that they're, and not to make too much out of that moment, but that gave fans a moment to cheer AJ in their own mind, to go, yeah, I'd like to see AJ beat Luke Harper, or I would root for AJ over Luke Harper. So there's this outside chance, because the only people on the horizon who are fresh opponents are actually heels, unless you call some people up. Is there a chance, Jason, that WWE is considering to stop fighting the tide and turn AJ babyface sooner rather than later?
It's possible, but I also think they could be doing something with Luke Harper. You know, technically they have the Freebird rules in place, so they can have any of the three Wyatt family members defend the tag title, so there's that. But he and Randy keep having those long stare downs. And I don't know if I just kind of assumed, like most people, Randy's doing some weird undercover thing, and he's not, you know, he's with the Wyatts, but he's working against them in some way. Well, what if he actually is with them, and he forces, Luke Harper out, you know what I mean? And they want to do something with Luke Harper as a babyface. It worries me because it's something that I think I could see creative having some fun with for a couple of months and then not having any idea what to do with Luke Harper after that. But, you know, at the same time, wait, I don't think they know what to do with Luke Harper now.
No, and I wish if this comes to long-term planning. If Luke Harper had
been pushed for the last month more than just the guy who holds the belts for Bray and Randy is symbolically, and is just sort of their sidekick or their mule or their enforcer. And they had actually him winning matches and the announcer selling the idea that, hey, this guy is on a roll. That would have had some believability and I think just given a better vibe to the show last night and what they did by having him all of a sudden inserted in a match where he could earn a title shot. And I just wish WWE planned ahead more. And I know that's not always possible to plan ahead and stick to the plan, but I think they should. There are so many times when they could. And if the plan changes, so be it. But at least look some of the time like, hey, they look at this match. Now I get why they did what they did the last 3 to 5 weeks with Luke Harper. This is a culmination. It's a good culmination for a TV angle, even if it's nothing more. And it sets the stage in case we want to do something more if Luke Harper were to catch fire. And they didn't do any of that. It just was, well, we got to have a main event on the show. What are we going to do? And every week, it's as Vince McMahon says, every week's a new week, and they are problem-solving instead of following up on something that they've built for weeks. And I think that aspect was disappointing. And, you know, if Luke Harper had gotten the kind of push that Braun Strowman has gotten, then I think people would have looked at that Fatal 4-Way last night as a bigger deal, and maybe there would be more buzz for the show and more ratings, and people would be more invested. So WWE and their lack of long-term planning, again, I just think kind of lets down the product.
Hey, do you have a Hall of Fame headliner in mind, Wade? I'm struggling to really think of one. I assumed it would be Goldberg, but now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, I'm all for, if anybody on Twitter wants to make suggestions, you can do that if you want to email us. It's a good question for Jim Ross tomorrow on the live cast to see if he's got anybody in mind. There you go, yes.
And he should be, and don't get me wrong.
I know, he should. I'm laughing because that'd be a Jim Ross answer. But it also, yeah, it should happen. No, I have, this marks kind of the official beginning of talking about it, I guess, because we're getting questions on it, and we'll be talking about this, you know, for months until it becomes apparent who is the leading contender. But at this point, I haven't put a lot of thought into it, and I don't think that there's just somebody who, a relatively contemporary, recently retired wrestler, who jumps to mind right now. Because they've gone through the people that they've left out. You know, I'm trying to think of, I mean, is there any outrage right now over wrestlers who have, you know, big name wrestlers who haven't been inducted due to politics or other factors?
Well, I think people would like to see Rick Rude, but, you know, it's not outrage. It's just, I think Bruiser Brody, but, you know, headline wise, gosh, you know, you're not going to headline with those. And realistically, I hope there's an obvious one we're not thinking of. Any chance they go back to the well and somehow re-induct somebody as part of some package just to have a headliner?
It's possible. But like I said, let's get some suggestions.
Shane McMahon maybe, and then they can retire him, and then he doesn't have to wrestle again.
Hey, what about Undertaker? Last ride.
I'll take Shane being inducted in the Hall of Fame if that means he's not in a match. I'd vote for that one.
What about Taker if it is the last ride? They did it for Ric Flair's retirement too.
The thing is I think they want to. I think they should save Undertaker for the Hall of Fame on a WrestleMania he's not on. So
sure.
If he isn't on WrestleMania, then do it. But if not, I think you want to get two events out of that, not just one.
Yeah, I'd do the same. You know, I don't think you need to induct him that, you know, that same weekend.
Yeah, Carl, did we cover your topic?
Yep. Excellent.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. I got to go to my second break of the show. When we come back, we'll get some more phone calls. Thanks, everybody. And hold on for a word from our sponsors.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
All right, we are back live on PW Torch Livecast. You can find our shows on demand at PWTorchLivecast.com. Jason, talk about your website. and everything that comes along with that, and get any plugs in that you want so people know what they do, what you do, and how they can access your writing and podcast beyond the appearances that you make on the livecast.
Yeah, something that's never happened before and may never happen again has occurred. An in-character interview was done. I made an exception for Broken Matt Hardy. He is here to hype TNA's total nonstop deletion show coming up tomorrow. That is an all-access audio show. You can listen to it at blogtalkradio.com/prowrestlingDOTNET. It's in character. We definitely have some fun. But he does talk about his contract status. He talks about whether or not he can take the Broken Universe with him if he were to leave TNA, and also the TNA ownership situation, which he said more than I expected him to. So be sure to check that out once you're done listening to us today. More details again, if you don't want to go directly to Blog Talk, you can't remember all that, just go to the main page at prowrestling.net and you will find information on that. As far as the website is concerned, you can check out my full-length... you can check out Jake Barnett's review of last night's WWE SmackDown Live, and then John Mork comes by on Wednesday morning with a really good recap of the Talking Smack show. So if it's on too late for you now, or you've just reached your limit of watching wrestling by the time Talking Smack is on, you can get a great recap from John Moore on Wednesday mornings on that show. Coming up on .NET Weekly, exclusively for .NET members, it will be Zach Zimmerman and I discussing all the news of the week tomorrow. Looking forward to getting together with Zach. He covers the NXT show for us tonight, so you can follow along with his live coverage as the show streams on WWE Network. And the members are also listening to my full-length audio reviews of WWE SmackDown 205 Live and Monday's Raw, and on Sunday they will hear an audio review that Jake Barnett and I will be doing for the WWE Roadblock End of the Line. You have to say it that way, Wade. That show coming up Sunday night. Jake and I get together for all the WWE pay-per-views. Live coverage, of course, for everyone at ProWrestling.net. If you are interested in membership to the ad-free version of the website, all you have to do is visit the main page, look for the sign-up area. Once you're in there, three different pricing options available. $7.50 gets you in the door for 1 month. You want to save yourself some coin, and who doesn't at this time of year? $5.50 per month is what it works out to if you take our annual option. You can also save some money at the six-month rate as well. All the details available on the main page of ProWrestling.net. If you have any questions at all, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at ProWrestlingNet.
Excellent. Thank you, Jason. Let's get back to the phone lines, and let's begin with area code. Let's go to 616 next. 616, please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Eric from Grand Rapids. How you guys been? It's been a while.
Oh, yeah, sure has. Welcome back to the show. What do you got for us?
I had a couple. They may not be headliners, but I was thinking either King Kong Bundy or Orndorff being in the Hall of Fame. And I don't know what your opinion is.
Orndorff's already in.
What their status is. Oh, he is? Okay. What about Bundy, then?
Isn't he part of the lawsuit?
That's all I got.
Wait, is Bundy part of the lawsuit on head trauma? It seems like there's some issues there.
I think that's the last time I saw his name came up, and that is going to hurt. New Day beating, we haven't talked about them yet, we will. New Day being, breaking Demolition's record, Bundy is, by the way. It would make sense to induct Demolition this year. Problem is it's had some rough things to say about WWE, and they're not in good standing, and it would be quite a break in policy for WWE to induct them. But they're somebody who I think would make a lot of sense, just pure storyline wise, to induct this year with perhaps New Day introducing them. But there's going to have to be some fences mended for that to happen. Same thing with Bundy. I just don't think they're going to want to give. I mean, it's. I don't like to talk about the Hall of Fame that way, where like it's a gift that they give to wrestlers who mind their P's and Q's and don't show disloyalty to the brand. But the fact is if I'm WWE, I'm not sure that I want to draw attention to people who have joined class action lawsuits or have lawsuits with WWE or just have badmouthed them over the years. I understand them not wanting to roll out the red carpet for them. If I'm with WWE, that is absolutely a factor, and I think that plays into it. Eric,
absolutely.
Go ahead, Jason. I'm sorry. Yeah. No follow-up, Jason.
The only thing I was going to say, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of guys we can figure out as far as just kind of not non-headliners. There's still a lot of people out there. So they can still have a good class. Midnight Express is one that I'm always just like, please get these guys in. They belong, especially now that the Freebirds are in. It just kind of feels like that. They just were such a great tag team, but I don't know if it'll happen because of Jim Cornette, for all, you know, some of the reasons you just said. Now, they have been able to mend some fences, but I do think it's going to be a little trickier with guys who have active lawsuits against them. Jim Cornette does not. He's not part of that. But there are guys like Demolition, or at least Bill Eady does. I don't know if Barry Darso is part of that as well. But, yeah, it's the headliner. That's the really tricky part to come up with.
It is. No question about it right now. Eric, anything else for us?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
Cool. Appreciate it. Thanks. All right, let's go next. Who did I have up here next? Oh, 347. Yep, you're up next. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Jordan from New York City and a VIP member.
Jordan, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for being a VIP member, too, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. I've been trying to get you to answer my question about Goldberg via email. I was wondering, why do you think Goldberg's run in 2003 was a failure? And was there ever a chance that maybe Vince would have convinced Austin to stay around for at least one more year to have him face Goldberg when Goldberg was with the company from 03 to 04?
Yeah, Austin has spoken with me about that either on his show or here on the live cast. It just didn't work out. Austin was dealing with injuries, and the chemistry just wasn't there between those two opponents. I know fans look back and go, oh, that's a dream match, but I didn't think it was much of a dream match back at the time either, because you're asking fans to choose between two of their favorites. You have Austin with a bad neck and Goldberg with a reputation for, not intentionally, but hurting his opponents. It just wasn't a match that was going to happen. It wasn't even realistically talked about as a viable match back then. And it really, there were so many opponents that I think were heels that made sense for Goldberg to face, that there's some very big differences between them, but the general mainstream casual fan perception of them was similar. Two bald guys who are badasses who I like, and it just wasn't a good chemistry fit, but mostly it was just Austin's health. It just was never seriously on the map. It wasn't about Vince convincing Steve to do anything, because Steve Austin could have ended up paralyzed. This isn't a video game. This is a real guy with real... He was really scared, and legitimately so, based on what was wrong with his neck, about getting in the ring with somebody who could drop him on his head, literally, and hurt him. So I'm trying to qualify this statement, because if you don't know better, then it's not. But if you know all the facts, it's incredibly selfish to even talk about that match being something that you wanted to see happen, because you're asking somebody to put the possibility of paralysis on the line for a match that I don't think was all that compelling at that moment in time, because they were two top babyfaces. So Jason, tackle that, and then we'll just talk about why Goldberg's run also, and you can jump on this too if you want, why Goldberg's run wasn't a bigger success at the time. I certainly have my thoughts.
Yeah, I think, okay, you put Austin versus Goldberg on the marquee, and yeah, it's going to sell. I do think it would have been a big match if they had built it up properly, but people would have been really disappointed. It is a lack of chemistry. I don't see that match working well. And then as far as why he didn't work, I think there's a lot to it. I think a big part of it is it wasn't a Vince McMahon creation. I don't know that Vince grasped the way to make Goldberg work, or if it's Vince. I mean, I think he understood what they were doing in WCW. I don't think it was like beyond his reach or anything. I just don't think he had the right vision for Goldberg. And then I think some of the way, and again, there's probably more to it, but I think, you know, he had a lot of people in his ear, and I wouldn't be surprised if Sean was there, he was among them. Certainly Triple H and Sean have spoken publicly about Goldberg in the past, like out just saying he doesn't even belong in the WWE Hall of Fame. So I'm sure that was an awkward first meeting after all those years of Triple H and Bill Goldberg, but that made some headlines back around WrestleMania in Atlanta. I don't remember the number, but there's certainly stories out there, interview recaps about that, with Hunter and Sean both agreeing he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. And so you got to think that if they're saying that at the time, they probably weren't the biggest Goldberg fans back when, you know, in 2003 either. And Lord knows they had some pull.
And the perception of Goldberg is that he was a pretend wrestler. He went through the power plant, came into WCW, was very green. He was not pushed because people, his colleagues, thought, oh, this guy's the next big star. He was thrown on TV because they thought, oh, we'll put a body in the ring and we'll let him win a couple matches and maybe we'll, you know, have a little something that we can work with. But it wasn't like this guy's going to be our top babyface facing Hulk Hogan at the, you know, Georgia Dome. That is not Goldberg's rep. He was green on the microphone. He was green in the ring. He was incredibly one-dimensional. He was a mega successful one-dimensional wrestler, but they weren't going to feed Steve Austin to Goldberg. And they didn't want to feed their guys to Goldberg for reasons that I've argued with Bruce Mitchell about. Bruce somehow thought what happened this fall was vindication, which was not at all the case because 2016 is a completely different set of circumstances than occurred back in Goldberg's first WWF run, WWE run. But Goldberg was not, had made a lot of money doing minimal dates for WCW. And to bring him in and have him start beating the full-time wrestlers who were over as main event guys, because the only way you can work with Goldberg is to feed him top guys. And if you feed him top main event guys and he beats them, even putting aside the pride, the ego, the morale of the locker room of taking a green guy who got fed, who made more money in a shorter period of time with less tenure, less pedigree, and some would argue less appreciation for what was handed to him and what the wrestlers who put him over and how those wrestlers had toiled for so many years to build their reputations. And then he came in and got to do essentially what the Road Warriors did in the mid to late 80s, you know, just plow through everybody to get themselves over. He didn't have a humility or an understanding or appreciation for what those wrestlers did. So I don't blame the guys in WWE who were ring generals, who talked the business, studied the business, knew the history, and could work really good 15 to 20 to 25 minute matches and knew how necessary it was to do more than just blow everything on one wrestler with one hot streak. And then, as happened with the Road Warriors when they went to a territory, you had the whole scorched earth policy where you had to just start over again because the Road Warriors gimmick was destroy everybody and plow through them, which the crowd ate up because nobody had ever done that before. That wasn't what was usually done, and people were in awe of these guys who had the look and the charisma and cool power moves and the strength. And so, yeah, the Warriors got over, but they never got anybody else over. In fact, they left every territory they left in worse condition than when they were in it because of the latitude that they were given to just plow through people. And, you know, Hawk no-selling the pile driver for Jerry Lawler in Memphis and destroying the reputations of so many wrestlers in the AWA to the point where some people just didn't want to even be in the ring with them. WWE learned that lesson. They were coming out of a hot period. They had won the Monday Night War. They had a pretty deep roster. And to start feeding their top guys to Goldberg, who was not going to work full-time on the road, and I don't blame him. He was financially independent, mega-rich, and even to get him in, they had to pay him a lot of money to work a part-time schedule. To then start feeding your top guys to Goldberg, the only way that it worked, which is to have Goldberg beat them, it's totally different to have Lesnar do it, because Lesnar's not a full-time guy, and he's going to get his win back. So it's a special attraction match. But to feed the full-time guys to Goldberg, who had worked really hard to become the winning team and had a willingness to go on the road full-time and earn the other two-thirds of the revenue stream that was vital to WCW or WWE, besides a big pay-per-view match here and there, it just didn't make business sense to do that. So Jordan, you can go back and read the back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter from that time and read my arguments and my case on it, but you know, Goldberg's a nice video game wrestler. He's a nice guy when you have no other baby faces who can work to give a winning streak to try to prop up a company that didn't do its job investing and building new baby faces for Chapter 2 of the Monday Nitro era. And he was phenomenally successful at that role for WCW with an incredibly shallow and weak and depleted babyface roster. But for WWE to bring him in and treat him like he was actually a viable, well-rounded promo and in-ring wrestler who could work a full who you could feed your full-time top guys to, when Goldberg's not going to go on the road and work house shows and he's not going to cut good promos for you and he's not a sustainable long-term act, I just think that WWE was right to tread very carefully when it came to him. Jordan, does that satisfy your wanting to hear an answer to that?
That's true. Thank you. But what do you think has changed now? Do you think Vince has like had a change of heart and like now he sees the big value in him than he didn't see back then?
They're not. Have they fed him any full-time guy right now? I mean, all they've done is given you a special attraction match to pop buys on the network by feeding another part-time guy to him. And
yeah.
I don't, you know, and yes, there's a nostalgia now. I mean, we're 12 years past, 14 years past the era that we're talking about, and now Goldberg has a nostalgia level to him, and I think that WWE's like, all right, we want to pop network buys and pop interest in the company. We'll have him come in, but work exclusively with another part-time guy and essentially trade wins with him. That's completely different than the argument during Goldberg's first run, which is, you know, start feeding him your top guys, because there's a reason Goldberg's match with Lesnar was short, because he's not a traditional worker. And so to put him into that circumstance in his first run in WWE, you have this very, very, very narrow range of what you can do with him. And again, the reality is WWE was doing well, and having Goldberg come in and start beating your full-time guys who are packing their bags 6 out of 7 nights or 12 out of 14 nights and traveling, and Goldberg comes in with a more cush schedule and a guarantee, you know, a big-time pay, and the guys are having to carry his ass in the ring, and he can't cut microphones in a business that's driven on cutting promos, and he's a babyface, so you can't put him with a heel manager. It just disrupts everything. I just don't think it was worth blowing up the entire formula of what WWE felt was a pretty good long-term approach to business, to blow it up for a guy who was a hot act in a dying promotion that didn't get particularly better in any area. So how they're using Goldberg now is fine, a one-off or two-off special attraction. But to go beyond that, it's fantasy land. It's just fantasy land. It's like it's as much a fantasy as the WCW versus WWF, you know, dream card that everybody wanted to see. It was 3 years too late to do that properly also.
No, I understand. I mean, I remember back then, I was just, you know, because I didn't know any better. I was just a big mark, and I loved Goldberg back then. And, you know, they gave him the belt and stuff like that. I mean, I missed him for that time he was gone. But I understand your arguments as far as, you know, he wasn't good and, you know, in the ring and, you know, didn't have good promos. But it is what it is, I guess.
Yep. All right, cool. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. All right. Lots of people lining up on the phone lines. So, Jason, any follow-up on what I had to say there? Anything you want to add? Well,
I think you could. The only thing I guess I would add is that I've always wondered how Goldberg conducted himself, too, behind the scenes. It just seemed like he had a chip on his shoulder coming out of WCW. He just seemed to become pretty jaded. I know he had some people in his ear in WCW, too, and he just... I really wonder if he went into this knowing they had a reputation for playing games, and he's Goldberg, and he's not going to put up with it, and it's all about the money, and I just don't know if he and Vince McMahon ever meshed as far as personalities are concerned, too. I wonder how much of a factor that was.
And it sounds like I'm, you know, burying Goldberg, and I'm just trying to state factually what I think what I'm saying is indisputably true. He was green. He wasn't good on the microphone. His style was unsustainable. His schedule was not. They weren't looking at this guy as, hey, you know, what they ended up doing with John Cena. We can ride this horse for 12 years. So let's put everything into him. It's just he wasn't that guy. And I just didn't think it was worth mortgaging your future because in the next 3 months you can make more money. And I think some people look at the business and they go, imagine what would happen if they did this. And, you know, I've run a business for nearly 30 years. I can't imagine just putting, you know, all the time that you build into establishing a formula that works and then going, hey, I have a chance to add, you know, 50% more to my revenue in the next quarter, but I might put at risk the next 20 years of being a successful business. Or just give myself a ton of headaches for a gamble. You know, you get to a point where you don't want that. And I just don't think Vince McMahon wanted it. And you're right, Jason. Goldberg, on a personal level, had to have such a bad impression of what the wrestling industry was all about with a cauldron of politics that he stepped into in WCW. And I don't blame him. And yes, clearly there was hostility towards him in certain circles in WWE, in part, I wouldn't defend every comment and every attitude towards Goldberg, but they didn't want to just welcome this guy with open arms to come in and then think, I'm going God's gift to the wrestling industry, and, you know, just feed me, like, you know, Ryback said, feed me more. If Goldberg came in and said, yeah, just start feeding me opponents to beat, that's, I can understand top guys going, wait a second, in 3 years, Goldberg's not going to be here. And it's just, he's too rich, he's too spoiled, and good for him for making all the money. Who wouldn't take that chance and that opportunity if they got red hot? But he's not going to be here in 3 years. He's not a guy who has paid his dues in this business to earn our trust, and he's going to be insecure with a chip on his shoulder because he isn't in the class that we are as workers in the ring or on the microphone. And they saw what happened. You know, some people were students of the game and saw what happened to every territory the Road Warriors were in, and I get that. But I also don't think it's like there's no hostility towards Goldberg as a person in saying that. It's just hostility towards the idea of feeding every big wrestler to Goldberg in the one way that you can do it, which is to have him do what he did to Brock Lesnar, because he can't work and he can't talk. So you got to protect that image. And then he goes away, and what are you left with? You're left with one of the dilemmas WWE has now, which is the Universal Champion and Kevin Owens, who people see as a joke, a comedy figure. You have AJ Styles as a guy who's losing to James Ellsworth, no matter what the, you know, circumstances are. That's still the case. And you have a roster where people are looking not at dream matches for the guys who are on the road full-time, but dream matches for people who aren't overexposed and defined down based on the TV show. I think that there was a danger of doing that, going that direction pretty quickly with Goldberg if they pushed him.
Coming up on Friday night, Bruce Mitchell's rebuttal on the live cast.
Yes. And the thing is they made some money with Goldberg, and this idea that it should have been more than it was seems to, you know, be around. And I just think it's people who think if a guy looks the part and it's presented as a big deal, that must mean he's as good as everybody else and as versatile as everybody else on the roster. And with Goldberg, there's a very narrow path on what he can do and how to use him. And yes, you can make money with that for 3 months or 6 months, but then what happens after that? And I just think the price to pay was too great. All right, I made my point, so let's let you make your point. Our callers, let's go to 610 next. 610, please state your name and where you're calling from.
My name's Todd. I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania.
From where? Reading, Pennsylvania?
Reading, Pennsylvania, yeah.
Yep, cool. Thanks for calling. What do you got?
All right. No problem. I was just thinking with Ellsworth, because they're going to run out what they can do with him in the ring, turning him into like a Bobby Heenan-type manager and get some heels over with him and doing some dastardly deeds because he seems to get the crowd into it and has some charisma that he could be like an old-school 80s manager.
I like that, Jason. How about you?
I heard everything but who we were talking about. I apologize.
James Ellsworth. Yep.
James Ellsworth. I really hope he ends up with AJ. I think, you know, as far as him being an 80s manager, I don't know that he's got the chops for it, but I really haven't heard him cut that heel promo yet. He's been very good with what they've asked him to do. But, yeah, I do think that's where this is going. Now, they did have a little bit with him and Miz. I don't think Miz's act needs it. Not that AJ's act needs it, but I do think it would be fun. My disappointment, though, I thought I had it all planned out for them. It just seemed like the easiest thing in the world. Dean Ambrose doesn't get his hands on James Ellsworth. He has to wait until all of a sudden Ellsworth, through some fluke, is the only guy left in the ring at one point in the Rumble. Dean Ambrose's music hits as the next entrant, finally gets his hands on him. Instead, night one after the turn, Dean Ambrose hits him with dirty deeds, overdone with. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I do like the idea of Ellsworth being a 80s-style heel manager. And like with everybody, he'd have his own style. He's not going to be, you know, Bobby Heenan. He's not going to be Jimmy Hart. He's, you know, Jimmy Hart Memphis. He's going to be a different type of guy. But this you know, weaselly, this guy who gets a big head because he thinks he really beat AJ Styles, and any man with two hands can accomplish anything. And he's one of those people where it just goes to his head, and he turns into this obnoxious, out-of-control character who then starts. And you know, what you have to do is come up with a plausible reason for him to be a manager that credible wrestlers would put their career in his hands. And that's where I have a little bit of an issue. With Jimmy Hart, I'm a promoter, baby. That's my other impression besides Mauro Ranallo. And so, you know, Jimmy's a tireless promoter of your career. Bobby Heenan, he's the brain. He's obnoxious, and you want to see him get beat up, but they portrayed him as this really smart guy. J.J. Dillon. He's a business manager. He's gonna make sure that you can concentrate on the gym and your workouts and partying and cavorting with women, and he'll take care of all the details because he goes to bed early and gets up early and works on your behalf. So, you know, in Jim Cornette, he's got mama's money, and he buys wrestlers. And he, and yes, he manages them, but so there was a backstory to the managers. There should put it this way. WWE may not think that this is important, because I think they have a lot of people feeding Vince McMahon affirmation that backstory and context doesn't matter. Let's just sports entertain people with funny, witty things that have never been done before. But with Ellsworth, there should be some sort of reason that any wrestler would put their career in his hands. And if they can come up with that and establish that, then I think he could get heat being the guy at ringside. And yes, then to give fans permission to make fun of him, instead of just having it be JBL do so in a mean-spirited way, but have Ellsworth be obnoxious enough that fans could delight in picking on the guy and chanting at him, I think there's money there, and I like that idea.
And there just hasn't been, like, a coalition of bad guys kind of together under, like, the Heenan family type, you know, thing that I think you could put a couple people in there and get some guys over quicker if the Ellsworth thing works with AJ.
Yeah, and I do. I mean, I'm hoping we see Ellsworth with AJ. If AJ stays heel, I've endorsed, even though I'm not totally against the idea of him just correcting. You know, if whatever he is on January 1st is what he has to stay for 3 years, then I'd say turn him face right away. But if we can wait till after Mania and really build a storyline up this summer for a turn, I think that can be a really good post-Mania angle, and I think there's still things he can do as a heel. And working alongside Ellsworth is one of them that I think could be a lot of fun. All right, cool. Anything else, Pat?
One other thing.
Yeah.
You guys are talking about headliners for the Hall of Fame. I was just thinking Brock still isn't in, and Eric Bischoff, they just released that DVD on him and everything that they maybe people they could put in that would for you be a draw.
Oh, speaking of Monday Night War era, Jason, Eric Bischoff in the WWE Hall of Fame, when you think back about, you know, how brash Bischoff was on those early Nitros on commentary and the things he said in interviews and calling out Vince McMahon for a fight and all of that, it's like you can just never say never, can you?
No, I think he ends up in the Hall of Fame at some point. I do. I don't think he's a headliner. Who was the other one?
The Rock.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Well, it's back in Florida. It's not Miami. I mean, if possible, would.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even have in front of me the list of... I need to look at the list of everybody who's been inducted. so that I have a checklist.
The guy that's still not in that I would like to see in, but he's not a headliner, is Bam Bam Bigelow. But
yeah. See, here's the thing. I have to say this, because if we're gonna start having this annual three-month discussion, which seems to be beginning this week, and that's fine. I'm not against it. I got to establish... the criteria that is important for people to keep in mind, that politics is a big dictator, as we mentioned with Demolition and King Kong Bundy. You know, Bundy co-headlined WrestleMania 2. He was a big enough star for a long enough run and accomplished some things before WWE and World Class and Georgia and all that.
He was on Married with Children.
He was on Married, yes. I think he is third from the top Hall of Fame. You know, third or fourth from the top Hall of Fame type guy, okay? But, like, in Demolition, I think are, you know, second or third from the top type headline people at this stage of the game. But politics is going to play into it. So you have to establish politics, not just merit and not just your own perception during however big of a fan you were at the time that they were a star. Number two, did they die? And it sounds crass, but did they die young? Because WWE doesn't want to draw attention to wrestlers who died young. They're going to have a quota or a maximum on that, and it's probably two dead wrestlers who died young every 3 years. I think they want to have a year, at least, you know, one or two out of every 3 years where it's not a guy who fans are going, oh, whatever happened to him? Oh, he died? Oh, too young? Oh, that's right. That's what the wrestling business does to people. They don't want that. Hall of Fame's supposed to be a fun night. So that's going to play into it. And so when you come up with your want list, you have to understand WWE has other things at play than the merit of their character and what they did while they were active wrestlers. So I'm just throwing that out there for people who you kind of come up with your dream team of people. There's reasons some people who aren't in and aren't going to get in for quite a while. They're not going to do Rick Rude and Bam Bam Bigelow the same year.
Yeah.
For that reason.
Wait, do you think there's ever? Do you think there's a chance that Vince could ever get desperate enough that he gives in and just for a headliner? Fine, you know, it's something he's been against. He doesn't want his name mentioned and all that. But Vince McMahon enters his own Hall of Fame.
I will be nervous if that happens because I think then he'll be announcing, you know, within 4 months of terminal illness. You know, like I don't.
Sure.
I don't think he wants to. I mean, could he get desperate? Yes. Is this a year of desperation? I don't think so. But if he thinks that WrestleMania is weak and it's not going to drive numbers, then if he says, all right, let's sell some Hall of Fames because I'm going to promise the Hall of Fame speech to end all Hall of Fame speeches because he wants to sell tickets to the Hall of Fame and he wants people to buy the network to watch it live. I think it's a bit of a hot shot because I do think he wants to stay out of it. I also think he feels like it's beneath him in the sense that he is bigger than the Hall of Fame. And I don't think that he. It's like, you know, if the Miami City Council decides they want to give Rock the key to the city, it's like Dwayne Johnson might think, yeah, but I have a, you know, I'm kind of busy, you know, like I'm busy in Hollywood and I'm traveling the world and I'm spending my money and it's just the city council, you know, 4 people voted, they just want to get my autograph. Like it's Vince's Hall of Fame, but Jason, I think he's bigger than his own Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I could relate. You know, that happened with me in my hometown.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I was thinking of you when I said that. All right, Pat, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot. Okay, well, let's go to Romeo, New York City. Romeo, thanks for calling.
Hello?
Yep, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Yeah.
Two quick questions.
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes and the Bullet Club. What do you guys think about that? I love the video. And Chris Jericho, do you see a face turn happening, or are they just going to keep teasing it?
All right, cool. Thanks. I was surprised that there were times that I felt that, especially at the end of Raw, but even at other times. But at the end of Raw, I'm thinking Kevin Owens is being reasonable and Jericho's being a prick.
Yeah.
And that's if they're going to a Jericho babyface turn, they should be doing that. And I was actually, I shouldn't be surprised because they portray Big Cass, the defender of the man who tried to sleep with someone else's wife, as the babyface. I mean, this is a company that
exposed himself.
Well, yes, that too, which just seems to be low. It seems to be a little lower on the list than what he did after the fact, but in terms of offenses. But yeah, this double whammy. It's like Cass is defending this guy. I don't think WWE, and again, who knows what is on Vince McMahon's agenda when he's trying to show the world that, you know, exposing yourself and sleeping with someone else's wife is something that 15,000 people in a building can get behind and cheer, and maybe it helps exorcise some demons that different people in control have when they're trying to frame morality in the world, or, you know, at least the level of how offensive immorality is. I mean, there's all kinds of different motivations for some things that go on the air, but... I was really surprised that finish got green-lighted, if the goal is for Jericho to go babyface.
I don't know that they thought that much about it. I think they're trying to get through the roadblock. Whatever happens with Jericho, I think they want to kind of leave it a mystery. I do think he is one of the potential Rumble winners if they want to get to that match somehow. It could be, and I don't think they have to have him win the Rumble in order to get to it, but I could see a scenario. It could be fun to have Owens trying to goad him into challenging AJ instead and bringing up their history if AJ's still champion. And Jericho ultimately chooses to go against Owens. I think Jericho does turn babyface before he goes. I just can't, part of it too, I just can't suffer through another Chris Jericho saves Kevin Owens finish. I don't want to see it. It's played out, and I hope they realize that.
What was Romeo's first topic? I've talked myself past remembering it. What was your first topic, Romeo?
Cody Rhodes, Bullet Club. What do you guys
think? Yeah, I like that. It works pretty, it's not what I would have thought Cody Rhodes was suited for a year or two ago, but given what Cody's trying to do and the turn at ROH, I mean, more power to him. Let's see what he can do in a new being kind of framed in a different way. You seem to be hedging a little, Jason.
Yeah, it doesn't jump out at me as a natural fit. I thought Cody was doing good things as a babyface on the independent scene. I like Cody as a heel though, and I like the turn at Final Battle. I just went into that going, all right, it's going to be two baby faces wrestling, and it'll be, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be a good match. But I really wasn't thinking about a turn. So the turn I did enjoy. I think some of it is I don't watch a lot of New Japan, and so I don't see what the Bullet Club is there. What I see is Ring of Honor, and it's a freaking mess because Adam Cole is the top heel. The Young Bucks are aligned with him in the Bullet Club, and they're baby faces. I'm sorry. I mean, they're playing to the crowd and everything else, and I know there's a Vice story on them today that makes it seem like they're trying so hard to be heels, and no, they're really not. You know, they're too sweeting fans and things like that. And it's a good piece. I'm not trying to bury it, but that's just kind of skimming it over. I got that impression. It's like, no. Bullet Club, I don't think Cody, I mean, I'm sure he'll enjoy whatever cut he gets of the merch money. I'm sure, you know, it'll be a big thing in New Japan. But as far as just Cody on the independent scene, Cody in Ring of Honor, I kind of like Cody being his own man as a heel. I just don't know that you need to put all those eggs in the Bullet Club basket.
All right, very good. We're going to wrap up on the show on that note. By the way, you can support this show and support PW Torch by going to pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you are about to shop at Amazon, just click the link. You'll go right to the Amazon homepage where you were headed anyway. But by doing that, we get a
90 seconds.
Otherwise, go to Amazon. So why not think of us when you're about to shop Amazon? Don't type in AMAZ, stop in your tracks, and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Another way you can support us and get a lot in return is by becoming a VIP member. And here are some details coming up on that. Jason Paul, we'll talk to you on the other side of the closing music here for the VIP after show. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Ring of Honor, a little bit more about Raw and SmackDown from this week, and a little bit more about TNA.
60 seconds.
And we got some good email questions waiting for us in the inbox. So we'll do a rapid-fire, multi-topic VIP after show for the ProWrestling.net members and also PW Torch VIP members, which will be posted on our respective sites later today. Sound good, Jason?
Sounds great. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Festivus. What am I forgetting? Happy Kwanzaa. Am I forgetting any of it? Happy holidays, everybody.
There you go. Happy holidays. Catch all. Thanks. Thanks, Jason. Good conversation. Thanks to our callers. Again, here's some details on going VIP. Treat yourself. Don't just spend money on other people. Spend money on yourself. See what it's like to be a VIP member. Here are details on what you're missing out and how to sign up. It's mobile friendly and takes about 90 seconds. Here we go.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
Thanks, everybody, again for your support. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch. And follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. check out MMATorch.com every day for the latest breaking news in the world of mixed martial arts, analysis of that news, special roundtable features, flashbacks, trivia, and so much more. Thanks, everybody. Until tomorrow with Jim Ross, Wade Keller, on behalf of Jason Powell. Signing off. This is life.